Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, the final Friday Three Martini Lunch before midterm election day 2014, just 4 days now until we all head to the polls, and some of you probably already have in early voting, to decide who controls the Senate, what the complexion looks like in the House, and some, of course, the key governor's races around the country. Chuck Todd, NBC's political guru, is on the road looking at some of the tighter Senate races, and he is in Louisiana, which is the source of our good martini. He caught up with Mary Landrieu, who is in very rough shape, according to most polls, not expected at all to avoid a runoff, and is a underdog when it comes to the likely runoff against Congressman Bill Cassidy. So Chuck Todd asked her very simply, why is President Obama so unpopular in your state? We're going to cut this into two parts. Here's the first part of her answer, and the one she should have stuck with.
There aren't any number of reasons, but, you know, one of the main reasons is because his energy policies are really different than ours. I mean, we are a pro-production state. He put the moratorium on offshore drilling, remember, after Macondo, and our state was furious about that. Now, he could have shut down the BP operations, but he didn't. He shut down the whole Gulf. Mm-hmm. When you shut down the whole Gulf of Mexico, it puts a lot of people here at risk and out of business. That's number one.
Largely true. Some other issues, I'm sure, but that was a big issue for Louisiana. Then she went on to number two.
And number two, to be very, very honest with you, in the South has not always been the friendliest place for African Americans. It's been a difficult time for the president to present himself in a very positive light as a leader. It's not always been a good place for women to be able to present ourselves. It's more of a conservative place. So we've had to work a little bit harder on that. But, you know, but the people trust me, I believe. Really, they do, to trust me to do the right thing for the state.
If I win, it's because people trust me. If I lose, it's because people hate blacks and women.
Chuck, you know my constituents. You know, they're just a bunch of bumpkins full of hate and suspicion of people different. And, you know, you just can't educate them. There's absolutely nothing redeeming about them whatsoever. But I am proud to be their representative in the United States Senate, is basically her position in a nutshell. I saw Bobby Jindal screaming bloody murder over this. It's interesting how much Landrieu has internalized the outside of the South traditional liberal, you know, perception of her region and her home state. And she's willing to deploy it when necessary, you know, like willing to badmouth her own constituents. So that's, you know, rather striking.
Hard to see how that's going to help her by suggesting that's the case. There's a lot of conservative Democrats down there who might be giving her the benefit of the doubt still, and probably less likely to do so now. So the bad martini now, and Mary Landrieu's comments are just part of a last-minute Democratic push to suggest that Republicans really are a bunch of racists. We mentioned briefly on yesterday's edition that the Senate Majority PAC, that's a Democratic special interest group running radio ads in North Carolina, basically trying to tie Tom Tillis to the murder of Trayvon Martin because he supports stand your ground laws. But every once in a while, as ridiculous as this narrative is, sometimes Republicans do really stupid things to make it seem more legitimate. That's where we head in our bad martini now. This is from the Associated Press. U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham's remark at a private all-male dinner, let's start right there, about mainly helping white men if he became president was a joke taken out of context, his campaign said Thursday. But Graham's opponent, Democratic State Senator Brad Hutto, said the comments shows he's a typical Republican who isn't concerned about the middle class, poor, minorities, or women. Here's what happened, apparently. After using profanity to say the government is messed up, Graham tells the group, if I get to be president, white men who are in male-only clubs are going to do great in my presidency. So, Jim, you know, we see stuff at the Al Smith dinner where people say things right before the presidential elections that they obviously don't mean, and if they were taken seriously, they'd look really, really bad. But when that narrative's out there, and you're saying this at an all-male exclusive club, it's going to be fodder for the other side.
On the one hand, it's kind of unfortunate that we live in an era where, you know, sarcastic remarks get taken literally, jokes are taken seriously, we're at a very humorless stage. On the other hand, if you really have presidential ambitions, and by the way, maybe our crazy martini should have been that Lindsey Graham has presidential ambitions, that if you generally do want to run, then you got to try to avoid handing your opponent a stick to hit you with. And there are a lot of people who, you know, there are a lot of women who, for fairly obvious reasons, you know, the idea of all male clubs kind of rub them the wrong way. You know, nobody likes to be told, well, you're not allowed in here. You're this is not for you. We don't allow your kind in here. And so that undoubtedly is going to rub a lot of people the wrong way. So not only is he there, the idea that he would kind of, you know, jokingly say, these are my peeps. These are my homies. My crowd is at this, you know, very exclusive all-male club. I mean, on the one hand, obviously, he's joking. But on the other hand, there are a lot of people for this is a bit of a sore subject. And we shouldn't be kind of surprised if this comes back to bite him later on.
Not a very competitive race, so it's hard to see that that would make a huge difference in that campaign. But it's not exactly what you want the narrative to be 4 days before the election, certainly. So keep an eye on that one a little bit. On to the crazy martini now, and this is good weed agency type fodder. This from the Washington Post. Federal employees who are issued so-called purchase cards are permitted to spend up to $3,000, known as micro-purchases, and do not have to disclose those purchases publicly. A House Oversight Subcommittee held a congressional hearing earlier this month on misuses of the government credit card, asking why federal employees were swiping the card for seemingly personal things like haircuts, gym memberships, and movie tickets. Scott McFarlane, investigative reporter at NBC4 in Washington, discovered through Freedom of Information Act requests that Department of Homeland Security employees put $30,000 of Starbucks on the cards in 2013. Agency employees spent about $12,000 at one Starbucks in Alameda, California, and several of those purchases were for just under the $3,000 micro-purchase threshold. The committee now has requests into DHS as to why taxpayers needed to buy all that coffee. And Ann Richards, Assistant Inspector General for Audits at Homeland Security's Department Office of the Inspector General, said they would review the transactions to determine if they were appropriate use of the cards. Jim, that's a lot of coffee.
I admit, I like coffee as much as the next guy. But the idea that, you know, well, you know, we need $3,000 worth of it. It was kind of striking, and I wish I had now put this in the book, Greg. But this, I mean, if you said, hey, we're going to, like, on the one hand, offices often have, you know, the petty cash drawer.
Yes.
Which is usually designed, hey, we're out of staples, or we need new, you know, paper for the copy. Like, it's inevitable you're probably going to have small expenses, and emphasize, you know, really, let me underline in red, small expenses. They're going to come up, and they're going to be something required for the office. Now, look, you want to have a meeting, you want to cater the meeting, you're having somebody, okay, you know, we can get into some slightly gray areas. But I'm really curious as to how the Department of Homeland Security really needed those movie tickets. Was it an action movie? They're doing research in case, you know, Hans Gruber decides to, you know, take over a building or something like that? The haircuts? No, you're supposed to get your haircut on your own time and on your own dime. I don't, you know, like all kinds of stuff like that. It seems like a formula almost built for abuse. And then, surprise, surprise, it's abuse. It just is a very frustrating set of circumstances, and it shouldn't require Congress stepping in. I also just want to salute McFarlane, that reporter who's on the local station here, for NBC affiliate. Even though he's a local reporter, he obviously does a lot of coverage of the federal government, stories like this, and he is the king of the FOIA requests. I understand he spends all day filing these requests, and as a result of it, finds really fascinating things like these runaway expenses and stuff like that. So my hat is off to Mr. McFarlane.
Ah, good point. Also, keep in mind that in Die Hard, not the FBI's brightest moment. So things could be learned.
Avoid those mistakes. By the way, I have something really fascinating to share with you and with listeners, Greg.
Yes.
I was at the up in New York for the National Review Institute's first annual Buckley Award dinner. Rob Long, a contributor to National Review, was telling the story of the time he had a chance to meet former President Ronald Reagan. Former President Ronald Reagan had left office. He was out in California. And his office of his former presidency was in Los Angeles in the building that was used as Nakatomi Plaza in Los Angeles.
Tell me it was on the 30th floor, please.
I don't. I assume it was finished. But I definitely know. I kind of would have liked to have seen Reagan make a cameo. Will, you've had it, pal. You know, that kind of thing. The other thing also, apparently, Rob Long tells this very funny story of at that point, he was a writer for Cheers, and he said, you know, we really wanted to have you on as a, you know, for an appearance. And Reagan said something in the vein of, well, I just wouldn't want to be seen as cashing in on the presidency. And Long responds, well, we wouldn't pay that much. And let me say, this is a cameo, Mr. President, not a series regular or anything. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Yeah. And then apparently he said there was a very awkward silence, awkward for him. He says, you know, Reagan is very calm, and he just kind of at one point blurts out, I voted for Mondale in 84. I'm sorry. And, you know, Long justifies it as saying, look, I was a very young man at the time. It was my first election, you know. And then, you know, so he just waits for Reagan to respond to that. He doesn't say he just had to feel the need to fill up the silence. And Reagan, he says, well, I guess there were just a few of you, weren't there?
Perfect.
So even then, even with the diagnosis of Alzheimer's around the corner, Reagan still had it. And a great funny moment. And now whenever you think of whenever you watch Die Hard, realize the President Reagan's office is somewhere inside that building.
Ah, I love it. I absolutely love it.
Even better movie, does it? Even better best Christmas movie of all time.
Yeah, it'd be great if you had come back in, forgot something before headed home for the holidays, taking a week off, you know? Great.
I have headed up to my keister with these German terrorists.
Fantastic. Exit question. What are the guys going for as Halloween?
I have two little guys. One will be a ninja. The other one will be Batman. And I'm emphasizing it's the Brave and the Bold era blue and gray Batman. It's not the raspy-voiced Christian Bale Batman who's intimidating the other kids into giving his giving away their candy. And stuff.
Adam West variety?
Not quite. He was more purple colored cape and things like that. But it definitely is more the old-fashioned kid-friendly Batman as opposed to, you know, this horrific, you know, creature of vengeance that comes out at night.
Excellent. We'll be trotting around with Minnie Mouse and a bumblebee, so we'll have...
Oh, wonderful.
Good times all. Jim, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.